George Bush Sr. was just elected president of the United States. Batman and Ghostbusters 2 are now playing in movie theaters. Paula Abdul just left the Lakers cheerleading squad to become a pop star. And my dad is excited about something called Microsoft Office. None of this really mattered to me, though, because I was busy playing video games. Welcome to Pods of Speech, an internet radio show. I'm your producer and editor, Dan McLaughlin. This week we'll be taking a look at video games with the help of a few friends. So join me as I take a look at some old school games with some old friends. I have a confession to make. For as far back as I can remember, I've been an avid gaming enthusiast. When I think back to my childhood, titles like Metroid, The Legend of Zelda, Castlevania, and the Super Mario Brothers immediately come to mind. If words like Super Soakers and Z Cavaricci's, Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, mean anything to you, then you grew up in a time before 3D video games and dual analog sticks. When up, up, down, down, left, right, BA, select, start, got you 30 extra lives in Contra. And fights broke out because your co-op partner kept ditching you on the top-down levels. In the grand scheme of things, video games are a relatively new medium. And before we go any further, let's define our terms. A video game is an electronic game that involves interaction with the user interface to generate visual feedback on a video device. The word video in video game traditionally referred to a raster display device. However, with the popular use of the term video game, it now implies any type of display device. The electronic systems used to play video games are known as platforms. Examples of these are personal computers and video game consoles. These platforms range from large mainframe computers to small handheld devices. Specialized video games, such as arcade games, while previously common, have gradually declined in use. In 1985, the North American video game console market received Nintendo's release of its 8-bit console, the Famicom, known outside Asia as Nintendo Entertainment System, or NES. NES. It was bundled with Super Mario Brothers and instantly became a success. The NES dominated the North American and Japanese market until the rise of the next generation of consoles in the early 1990s. Other markets were not as heavily dominated, allowing other consoles to find an audience, like the Sega Master System in Europe, Australia, and Brazil, though it was sold in North America as well. In the new consoles, the gamepad took over joysticks, paddles, and keypads as the default game controller included with the system. The gamepad design of an 8-direction directional pad, or D-pad for short, with two or more action buttons became the standard. The Legend of Zelda series made its debut in 1986 with The Legend of Zelda. In the same year, the Dragon Quest series debuted with Dragon Quest, and has created a phenomenon in Japanese culture ever since. The next year, the Japanese company Square was struggling, and Hironobu Sakaguchi decided to make his final game, a role-playing game modeled after Dragon Quest and titled Final Fantasy, resulting in Final Fantasy series, which would later go on to become the most successful RPG franchise ever. ...1987 also saw the birth of the stealth game genre with Hideo Kojima's Metal Gear series' first game, Metal Gear, on the MSX2 computer, and ported it to the NES shortly after. In 1989, Capcom released Sweet Home on the NES, which served as a precursor to the survival horror genre. In 1988, Nintendo published their first issue of Nintendo Power magazine. And the rest, as they say, is history. I talked with some friends recently about video games and their early gaming experiences. What were some of the first games you remember playing?
Well, I mean, I have some really, really far back memories of, like, the Atari and, like, the first, like, Mario incarnation, I want to say, which was where it was almost sort of just like a competition where you, like, there was, you know, those little turtles with the spiked shells and then the power-up thing at the bottom where you basically, like, fought each other and knocked each other off.
That's going way back.
Yeah. I guess I remember playing some Duck Hunt. Duck Hunt was great. You could kind of get up right close to the TV and have almost 100% accuracy. And the dog would mock you if you missed or whatever, and speed shooting and stuff. I guess that was on the combo cartridge on the NES with regular Super Mario, which was also great, you know, side-scrolling platformer, which dominated a lot of the games that I... That style dominated a lot of the games that I loved for a long time. I mean, there was Super Mario, then Super Mario 2. You know, you could pick who you wanted to be. There's like Toad, you know, the little power-up jump, and Princess Peach. I don't know if they call it. I guess it's just the princess. And then she could float. And then really the best of the Mario's is Mario 3. At least of those species, you know, the like rabbit cap and the whole layout of the world was, you know, you had the map beforehand, and you could go around and like pick like bonus levels and stuff, and then it was, you know, of course in that movie The Wizard, which is basically just a Nintendo advertisement the entire time. But
are you talking about the movie with Fred Savage?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's safe to say we've all probably seen that.
Classic movie.
The Power Glove.
I love the Power Glove. It's so bad. Yeah, well, just keep your Power Gloves off her, Pam, huh?
And then, you know, the little kid who was a whiz at all things Nintendo. Contra was, I didn't like it as much. It was too fast moving or something. I think it just got, it was like Nintendo hard, so to speak. Like, it was fucking hard.
What game are you talking about now?
Contra?
Oh, Contra. Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, that was good. You know, either the missiles and the spreading projectile shots and stuff. I never that was not a big fan. I remember a couple times, you know, back right when the Nintendo Cut came out, I didn't have one. And I had to go to other friend's house, and basically I was relegated to watching for a lot of my game playing experiences as a young person, but I was so wrapped in what was happening and watching. And that one, at one point I had, I had to really, really go to the bathroom and really, I had to piss real bad. And, it did not actually overcome the desire to continue watching these games being played. I think I wound up wetting my pants. I don't know.
So you're saying that instead of going to the bathroom, you couldn't pull yourself away from watching the video game that was being played on screen, and you end up pissing yourself?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, much to my chagrin, later when they figured out that I had, basically completely set myself down. From there, then I can't remember exactly how old I was, but old enough to, be able to get up and go to the bathroom when I needed to. But then Super NES came out, and that was amazing. Super Mario World, and a lot of other iterations after that. I hadn't really started to get into role-playing games. But that was also one of the first sort of outlets into, not just side scrollers, not just like platform games where there was some Final Fantasies.
But you played. You ended up starting to get into RPGs at the time.
Yes. There was once again, I was doing a lot of watching because I never had a system until much, much later of my own. So I usually had to either wait my turn or just. And I'd been sort of a bystander for a lot of my initial gaming experiences. So I was content to watch by then. And when I did actually get to play the way I did play, it was it would probably be more tuned to the Wii these days. I'd jerk the controller around as though that would help me get around in some way, but I don't know, it was just very expressive when I played. By the time, I guess I'd watched Final Fantasy 2 and 3 be played, and I guess Final Fantasy 4, maybe. Those you couldn't actually do multiplayer with, but somewhere, maybe after that, Squaresoft had really started to make a name for themselves, and they had put out Secret of Mana. And also alongside of that, there was the 4-port controller for the Super NES, so you could actually have 4 people playing at once. And the cool thing about Secret of Mana, it being a top-down RPG, action RPG, not turn-based, was that you could have 3 people all playing each individual character in the game. That was my first experience of being able to play games with other people, like alongside them, rather than, just standalone on your own. And that was some of the most fun I'd ever really had, as far as gaming is concerned. You're gaining levels, you're killing bosses, you're getting gear, you're leveling up magic, and it's all, good against evil. And it's a really interesting story, too. It's sort of an extension of the imagination games that we'd play when we were little anyway. We'd played Street Fighter. That was a lot of fun. Not as good at that, but definitely, definitely entertaining. Street Fighter 1 and 2, of course, Blanca and Edward with the 1,000 hand slap.
I was more of E-Honda man myself.
Yeah. E-Honda, that was, yeah. Mm-hmm. I liked Blanca. I really didn't catch my stride with fighting games until Soul Calibur. Soul Calibur was my jam. Yeah, I remember playing that actually in the arcade back when they had arcades. I loved it. Valdo with the Scissorhands. He was pretty good. And then the Nightmare. Nightmare's badass. I like slow and powerful. That was my that's my sort of.
That's my gaming mantra.
Go for with fighting games anyway. You know, I like the fast ones are cool too, but I'd rather much just you know kill somebody in like four hits if you connect each one. You know.
Well, that's the thing with games like Street Fighter. It's like chess. No two games are going to be exactly the same when you play them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then that's really when it comes down to more like skill and reaction time, and you know you're able to sort of hone that type of like being able to do the combinations and being able to pull off you know sort of finesse type moves and that kind of thing. Which is a completely different kind of satisfaction and enjoyment than, you know, the RPGs, you know. Fighting games you're not going to get into for the story, for the most part. You know, I haven't ever finished a fighting game and be like, oh, wow, that was really edifying and entertaining. You know, it was more just like, all right. All right, you know, you, so you're playing with friends, you're playing... You know, moving through these stories, getting gear, doing big things in Secret of Mana, and then you know you progress, technology gets better, you get older, and then something you know Warcraft is out there, which had originally been a strategy game, but then Blizzard had the good idea to turn it into a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, which basically takes the idea of Secret of Mana, which, you know, being able to play with four people at your house. Now you're able to play with, you know, 65,000 people in one server, like, from all over the U.S. and maybe all over the world. And you know, you still have your role. There's healers, damage doers, tanks, so on and so forth. And you know, and various roles fit to various people's personalities. And then you sort of have the play of interaction and the play of interaction there, as with regular life. Except you know, here you are with a common goal. Things are a little bit simpler. You can you get hurt, you get healed, so on and so forth. It's very interesting and immersive imaginary world with exceptional good lore. The story's got better and better. I mean, most people might rush through these things, but if you actually ever sat down and read some of the quests or the any of the lore about the stories, I mean, it's like influenced by Greek and Nordic mythology, you know, of course, a lot of Lord of the Rings influences, but just amazing, like really, really, really interesting stuff. Maybe some, you know, H.P. Lovecraft, they throw a little bit of that in there, old gods and things. And then that's sort of just an orgy of different mythologies and just cool stories all mixed up there, and then here you are, you know, you're in there playing in there yourself, you know. Yeah, and you know, having had played from I guess 06 up until late 08, you know, some of the people I've never actually met face to face, but I mean, I've known them for years. You know, they've either through guilds or through questing or through one thing or another, we've become friends, found that, you know, we like one faction or the other. And then, I mean, you know, we're all agreed, we're all pretty much nerds anyway, so there's a lot of, like, overlap with, like, science fiction. Like, oh, I love Blade Runner. It's such a good movie. Or, you know, Battlestar Galactica.
Sure,
not as much of a fan there, but, you know, a lot of, I guess, you know, a lot of anime fans on the Warcraft. But, yeah, these are people that I could probably, you know, if need be, or if I were to, you know, travel across the country, I could probably crash at somebody's house all the way across. And, you know, these are also people, again, that I know their voices, and I know, you know, what maybe they look like, but never actually met them in person, but still solid friendships, some of whom I still correspond with on the phone today, you know.
What do you like best about video games?
That's a good question. I mean, for one, it's entertaining. I mean, straight up, and it's not a passive entertainment. It's something that you're actively taking part in. You know, it's like a book, except you. I mean, for the best kind of games, like it's like a movie or a book that you are actively proactive in and are affecting at least some part of the plot. You know, you're moving through it yourself rather than just reading about or, you know, hearing about these different characters or whatever. I mean, and I love literature and I love media and all, but the best part, I think, for games is that it puts you in there. It's like, you know, it was that good idea of choose your own adventure, except much better layout and, you know, better graphics. I'm sure at some point, you know, we'll figure out that video game playing can help fight against Alzheimer's, you know, since you're using various parts of the old gray matter up there. I'm sure. I mean, I don't doubt. I mean, if exercise and crossword puzzles help, then more than likely, you know, video games will also. I don't know. Somebody should do some research on that.
What video games did you grow up playing?
I started off with stuff with like Duck Hunt and Super Mario Brothers and a lot of computer stuff too, like the quest games, like King's Quest and Police Quest and Monkey Island. I don't know if you got to play any of that stuff at all.
Oh, yeah. Well, Adventures of Monkey Island is making a huge comeback now with the iPhone game.
Yeah, definitely. Those games are classics, so I've been very happy with what they're doing with that.
I gotta say, the Monkey Island games are pretty difficult, though. I mean, I use the hint system a whole lot.
Every now and then, like, figure out some of that stuff. It was, I remember with King's Quest, having to, like, save up the money to, you know, buy the guidebook to figure out how to get past this puzzle so I can get to this temple somewhere and fight this this mythological creature in this dungeon. Those were the days. Now I can just look it up online and everything. Taking hours to figure stuff out and to try to get by it. Yeah, you'd have the manual out and you'd be, you know, they had the notes in the back, and that was actually useful back then because, like, you'd have to put in, like, the code for, like, the level you got up to or, you know, the specific way you had to get past this or, you know, or even, like, with, like you mentioned, Metroid, like, trying to come up with a map to figure out where everything was. As crazy as that sounds. Trying to map that whole game by hand.
There, you can actually, if you type in Metroid map in Google Images, you can get a JPEG that's like 1680 by 1420 of the entire Metroid map of the first game. It's pretty impressive. So what other games did you play growing up?
Let's see, what other stuff did I play? Punch-Out, Mike Tyson Punch-Out. That was a game, trying to get the goal timing down with that, and let's see, Double Dragon. I love Double Dragon, especially like with my brother. We both able to like play that stuff, and then being able to, like, you're walking along, all of a sudden you pick up a weapon or like a bat or something, and it was just like so cool. I don't know if you remember Rampage, like the World Tour, where you play as like a giant monster and like destroy like the whole city and everything.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And once in a while, you punch a hole in the building, and like a big leg of lamb would be there, and you could eat it for health. Yeah, didn't in Ghosts and Goblins, like, the more injuries that you took, like, the less clothes you would wear?
Yeah, eventually you'd be running around in just your underwear and jumping all over the place if you got hurt enough.
Excellent. Now, what was your favorite Mega Man? I know the Mega Man series was, historically known for its like notorious difficulty level. I mean, the first Mega Man is basically unplayable. I'm serious. Oh, forget it, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever rage quit a game?
Yeah, rage quit, yeah, definitely. It was just like, it's getting so upset that you just kind of throw the controller to the side and just shut off the system and walk away, you know? Like,
have you ever rage quit a game, like, so bad that you actually never went back to it?
I don't think about never went back, but definitely, like, giving it maybe, like, a week or a couple of weeks off before, like, I even... you know, dared to put it in again because just needed that time to cool off. I was so upset at it. It was almost like it became like a person. You know, I just didn't want to talk to it to look at it again.
It's like a bad relationship.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you don't love me, you won't let me beat you at all, you know, or get to the next stage. Or meanwhile, your friends are talking about how to get past this thing, you know, finally, and you're still stuck at the level and everything. It's like,
video games are a relatively new medium. What is it about gaming that you like the most? I mean, what keeps you coming back to them?
I guess it's kind of like a little bit what we were talking about before with like difficulty. I guess it's part of like the challenge to it, you know? I mean, being able to accomplish something in that like older games, in that like 8 to 10 hour, you know, frame of gameplay that it had there, and you know, you started off at the beginning and finally you got to the end, whether it's like saving the world or saving the princess, it's just like the sense of accomplishment, like you actually did something. And, I mean, you know, opposed to like other things when you're a little kid, you know, like you may like read a book or, you know, finish a class or something, but, you know, this is something like more than that, because like you put so much of your time into it and sometimes it was just so like personal. And finally, you get to the end of that thing, and it's like this great feeling of like satisfaction. 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 Socially as well, I mean, with my siblings or my cousins, you know, the thing we would do is when we all got together, we'd find whoever had the game system and start, you know, playing Street Fighter against each other and seeing, you know, who could top who and everything, or trying to, you know, play through Final Fight without, you know, see who could get like the highest score, who could get the furthest without dying. I mean, it's one thing to chat with someone online that you've never met before or anything, but when you go through some dungeon with them for 3 hours, and finally, you've gotten past this boss and gained this loot from them that you've been looking for after all this time. Is you build like a camaraderie with someone that you wouldn't get by, you know, just regular communication. So it's really amazing to me the fact that you can build like a trust and a close friendship, almost like somebody who could like watch your back in a video game. By playing with them.
I don't know about you, but like I'm a big fan of shows like Bite Jacker and stuff like that, and I really do follow the indie game scene because I think we're getting exciting titles out of the independent game world that really do rival. In some ways, they don't rival in terms of graphics and amount of money behind the tech, but in terms of gameplay, like core gameplay, and I've always thought gameplay was more important than graphics, that these indie games are rivaling, you know, AAA titles.
Oh yeah, totally. Without doubt. I mean, that you're definitely seeing a lot of that, where it's kind of like these guys, it's almost like those indie guys are like a throwback to how games first were, where they didn't have a lot of graphics to work with, but they had a lot of had to come up with ways to excite you that were with the gameplay as opposed to like the visuals and stuff. And, you know, I mean, you look at that game, you know, the Sleep is Death, and it's pixelated graphics, but, I mean, I just get excited thinking about the stuff you can do with that game, like all these different scenarios and whatnot.
Yeah, and especially like with recent developments with indie games, like they're pushing the genre itself. You know?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, like that again. Death is Sleep. I mean, you have this guy who built this game by himself, and he came up with a totally new game genre. And there's no doubt in my mind that someone will see that at some big studio, and they'll pay attention and try to implement something like that into it, like a major game. Yeah, and like another game that's like great with the time mechanics and storytelling, being able to convey like a sense of art and thoughtfulness to a video game, as opposed to just blowing up all the monsters and finishing a level. You kind of sit there at the end and go and ponder, you know, what it is that you just saw. And for some people, it's almost like life-changing. It's like, look at this, and they're just amazed at, you know, at what they just witnessed.
To gain a better understanding of video games and the gaming industry, I spoke with Grant Schonkweiler, a programmer, designer, and producer currently working with Megatouch Games in Philadelphia. Grant is also a founding member of VGI, or the Video Game Growth Initiative. The Video Game Growth Initiative is a project started by several game developers and professionals in the Philadelphia area. They are seeking to develop a cluster in Philadelphia to entice AAA studios to set up satellite studios here, to entice supergroup AAA studios to form here, and to create positive business relationships between investors and smaller casual studios. In a recent phone interview, I spoke to Grant about video games, the video game industry, and games he played growing up.
Pretty much been playing games my entire life. I remember my cousin getting an Atari 2600 back in the day and playing Pitfall. That's the first game I remember playing. The first game I really remember having an impact on me, though, was Super C, the second Contra game that came out. My cousin gave me his old Nintendo, and that was one of the two games that he gave me. He gave me Super Mario 3 and Super C, and I think Super C for some reason just really resonated with me, and I played it a ton as a kid, and then, you know, also played Mario with my siblings, and we had a great time. But, you know, played games growing up, stuck over to my friend's house to play games as often as possible, but really, when my family moved to the second place I lived as a kid is when games really became a big part of my life. I saved up and bought a PlayStation and also got a computer that was good enough to, you know, play games. And really, I think when I decided I was going to start making games was I played Pokemon. With a friend, and back in the day when we would trade off, and, you know, he'd spend a few days playing, and then I would just spend a few days playing, and I forget what I did, but I did something to screw up our Pokemon game, and he got all mad at me, and so we both got mad at Pokemon as a whole, and we ended up writing a game called Pokemon Killer. Which was my first game design I ever wrote, probably, I think I was 10 years old. And we submitted it to Sony, and they sent back an email saying thank you, but due to copyright reasons, we cannot release a game called Pokemon Killer. That I was pretty much, I was grabbed by the idea of making video games, and I got Warcraft 2, which really was when I started making games electronically, and started building levels a lot and sending them to friends, playing with them online with other people, having people critique them, and kept building levels, and, kept doing that for the rest of the time I was in middle school and high school, built levels for different games and stuff, and tried to learn some programming. And then for college, I went to Full Sail University in Orlando, Florida, and got a bachelor's degree in game design development. Then after that, I moved up to Philadelphia and started working as a game programmer at Megatouch Games. Did that for a year, and then was kind of sort of moved into doing design and programming at the same time. And a few months ago, I was moved to doing design full time. So that's kind of my whole path through games and how I got to where I'm at now. Warcraft 2, when it came out, I started designing, I guess someone must have been about 12, was when I designed my first level for Warcraft 2. And, you know, just kind of played it back and forth with a friend. And then, you know, he was like, let's start putting games up online and playing them with other people on Battle.net. And then, started putting levels up, and as soon as we would play the level for a while, you know, and there was random people, I'd ask for their feedback on it and, you know, see if they were interested in what I was doing. You know, sometimes I would base it around a theme like Lord of the Rings or something like that and try and do it. But, yeah, so I started doing that when I was 12, so, yeah. So the game industry, even in the last few years that I've been involved in it, it's really changed. So, you know, back in the day in the 80s, if you talk to guys, basically a game team was a programmer and maybe an artist, and that was about it. And, you know, around the late 80s, that's when you started getting bigger teams where you had programmers and artists and sound guys. And over time, we've gotten more roles and things like that, more production, more managers, and you know, eventually designers came out of that. And while we're kind of like the weird, awkward child who has to be there to help out with the game development, really everyone who works on a game, in my mind, is a game designer. It's just some people have specific roles where that's what they do. So, you know, that's definitely been a big change over time where we've just had more specific roles up here. And while that's really cool because there's more teams and people can specialize on things and teams get bigger and we can make bigger and better games, it kind of, from talking to guys who have made games in smaller teams and myself having made games in smaller teams, we've kind of lost that really cool sense of organic. You know, it's me and you, we're in the trenches and we're just making a game together. And when we get done with the game, we get done with the game. It's our pride and joy. You know, now there's a lot of management, publishers, and things like that to get involved, and, you know, it's a business now, so, you know, not necessarily everyone is making it for the love of making games. A lot of people are, you know, making it for the money. That is a problem, but at the same time, you know, it's cool because we get to make our big AAA games, and at the same time, a lot of guys in Philly, not myself, but a lot of the guys that I'm friends with are very small independent studios. They're just making games because they love making games. There are a lot of guys who have been out making games for 10, 15 years at these big studios, making big AAA, you know, $10 million games on 100-man teams. And they just got to a point where they were like, hey, we don't want to do this anymore as a big team. We want to kind of, you know, boil it down and just be the essence of the three or four of us sitting together in a room, making the best game we can that comes from our imagination. So good thing about that is we're starting to kind of see these indie games become really popular and make a lot of money on these really small teams. There's games like Braid and World of Goo. You know, these were one- and two-man teams that made these games. Keep in mind, they're guys who have been making games forever. You know, these guys have 8 to 10 years experience each in making games, so they weren't necessarily people coming straight out of college or anything making games. But we're seeing a lot of these guys making more art-centric games, games that are just from the heart and the passion of these guys. And to me, that's really exciting because as someone who makes games that aren't very, you know, much of an art expression as much as just straight up fun, it's really exciting to me to see the medium growing and people, you know, being able to make these art games. Now, where the industry might be heading from a lot of what I've been hearing is that the industry is semi-heading into this Hollywood business model of contractors where basically, you know, you have this core team of people making a game, and this is for the big AAA games, and then you hire out and contract a bunch of artists or designers, programmers, whatever, to come in and build the content for the game. While this is good for big AAA games, it does kind of worry me because, you know, I don't want to be a contractor. I like being in a team and really feeling part of the team. But we are seeing art starting to go that way, and there is talk that possibly other parts of the industry will go that way. But I don't know. I don't really see it going that way, but art is definitely on that way, which makes sense because, you know, you don't want your guys that you have in-house paying benefits to and hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to, you know, spend time to build a chair that's been made 100 times. So, there's a lot of things in flux right now in the industry, but it's an exciting place to be in. You know, it's a young industry. It's only really been around as an industry for about 30 years now, and there's a lot still growing, a lot of growing pains that we're going through. Even though it's 30 years, we're still kind of in our teenage years, you know, trying to figure out what we are as an industry. So it's an exciting time to be part of it.
You've got games like, you know, Halo 3 or Modern Warfare 2 that are, in a sense, very much modeled after the way Hollywood studios put games together. But then you get games like Cave Story, which I think I've played more than any of the AAA titles. So it's weird. There's kind of two worlds going on.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, for me, I really draw a lot of inspiration from games like Cave Story. And you know, from guys like Pixel who make Cave Story that are just, you know, these fascinating guys to me who just have this, you know, entire world in their head and can sit down and do it. You know, a lot of guys like me who are designers or other people who are professionally working in the industry, we have these same things in our head and these great games that we think we have, but, you know, a lot of us just don't have the drive to sit down and do it. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things that inspires me about those guys is that they just sit down and they do it and they make the game. Out the way that they envision it to be, and you know, lucky for them, it's pretty awesome, and they have friends that probably play test it and get it to a good solid point. But yeah, there's definitely a new division, which does kind of, if you think about it, follows how films have now become divided into independent films and you know, mainstream films, and mm-hmm. and it's definitely cool because it allows there to be something for everyone. You know, my mom can go play a game like Peggle, and then, you know, my dad can go play a sports game, and then I can go play my independent, you know, World of Goo or whatever and really enjoy it. So it's definitely good for the industry and good for games.
I then asked Grant about VGI Philly and how they got started.
Yo, Project Blow. I'm real surprised that you made it this far, but now I'm
not. Right, so the VGI Philly, I'll split, give you a brief story about how we were started. So the VGI Philly is kind of a very Philadelphia kind of attitude organization. The way that we started was last year we were out at the Game Developers Conference. All of us did not know each other. There was a group of four of us that originally started it. And we didn't really know each other. I was at a... at an IGDA, International Game Developers event, talking about, you know, just what we wanted to do to help grow the industry. And the guy who was running it runs the New Jersey chapter of the IGDA. And I made a comment that I was in Philadelphia and I didn't really like the community in Philadelphia. I didn't really know anybody. Could I come to the New Jersey meeting? And he was like, yeah. And Mike Worth, who is another co-founder, was at the thing. And he stands up and he's like, what do you not like about Philly? And we ended up started yelling at each other about, you know, Philadelphia and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, somehow sports got involved and then cheesesteaks. And then next thing we knew, we were best friends. And, you know, we kind of talked about how there weren't a lot of professionals in the area, but we wanted to get to know each other better. And he introduced me to Lou and Hardy. And they were like, hey, look, we're in the city and we don't want to leave the city. Mike runs a game music company in the city, and he was like, I want to bring more people into the city to make games. And I was like, I love game developers. I want to bring more people into the city to make games. And Lou and Hardy were both like, let's do this. So we started the Video Game Growth Initiative Philadelphia. So basically what we're trying to do is foster growth of the industry in Philadelphia, be it through government incentives. We work a lot with the mayor's office in the city, and also a couple other organizations, which is interesting to me because I get to learn a lot about the government in fighting about who gets what. So we're kind of educating them on the video game industry and know, what they need to do to be competitive with other cities in the world, not just the United States. And then the other thing that we do is we help the academics in the area, Drexel University, UPenn, Temple, and, you know, we help them get in touch with local game studios that already exist here for internships. We comment on their you know, their what they're teaching, let them know if we think that's a good idea. You know, most of them are pretty smart, they know what they're doing, but, you know, to help them out if they need it, and to kind of connect them with other studios and help the studios in any way we need to. So we're kind of focusing on the three sectors of government, community of studios, already existing studios, and academics to kind of create an area that's really attractive for new studios to come and establish in the city. Now, through this, we found out that, you know, when we originally started, we thought there were 4 studios in the city. Now, come to find out, we're up to around 10 or 11 studios in the greater Philadelphia area, including South Jersey and Delaware. So we not only through this have grown our own community of game developers, but also a lot of talent from the academics to attract, you know, bigger studios and other people like that. A few months ago, we had a tour come in of international journalists of games media and stuff like that, and they toured the city, they toured some of the game studios, and they learned about how games are growing in Philadelphia and Pennsylvania, and we had the government talk about some of the tax incentives that they're bringing, and we're also helping to author a bill at the state level for tax incentives. So it's a lot of different things, but basically our mission statement is to grow the interactive game industry in Philadelphia.
Listeners can find out more about Grant at grantschonkweiler.com and the Video Game Growth Initiative at vgiphilly.com. I sat down with some friends to hear their thoughts on some old school video games that they used to play.
How about Dig Dug? You remember that game?
I do remember that game.
Dig Dug was pretty good. I like Dig Dug. I'm talking about old Nintendo.
Well, Zelda, I would say for me, Zelda is probably my favorite. I have the warmest memories of playing Zelda of any old Nintendo game.
Yeah.
I mean, that game was just cool. I mean, it's the, you know, looking, it's hard to judge those things objectively because the graphics are obviously terrible by today's standards. But
at that time, mm-hmm. that was a game that was unlike anything else, really.
Yeah.
I loved Link, the sequel to that.
Okay.
Because I spent hours and hours playing that game. And it was like a whole world, you know, where you were really building a character, yeah. And you know,
is Link the one for GameCube?
No, it was on Nintendo, okay. Regular old NES.
Wow.
And it was the sequel to Zelda, but the idea was you would be going on these missions and getting,
acquiring more things.
That's right. Yeah. And building your character and solving puzzles and solving mysteries. And
one of the things about that game that was kind of revolutionary at the time was Miyamoto, who was the designer of the first Link, said instead of just having this top-down view of things, when you'd encounter like an enemy, you would go into the
side to side.
Yeah, side to
yeah.
side.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I always associate.
Remember Gauntlet? I'm sorry.
I always associate you with the game Metroid.
Oh, I love Metroid. I spent a whole summer.
I did beat Metroid.
It was not the first game I ever beat. The first game I ever beat was the original Super Mario Brothers.
Okay, you did beat it.
I did beat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But And really, this was a game that sort of brought my brother and I together. You know, it just brought the two of us together. Cause
level 8-1, 8-2, 8-3.
Yeah, and
8-3 was scary.
It was a, that's it, man. It was a game that actually scared you.
Well, you're in hell
and
at the end.
I don't remember that. I just remember that like it affected me like no other game. Like there was the suspense and there's the fear. In an atmosphere with the sound effects and the color and the, you'd be like, oh my God, am I gonna make it through here? Mm-hmm. You know, and the tension would build and build. That's why I thought that was a great game. You know what I think I did though? I think that was a game that I bought like the book for, like sure. The guide for, like yeah. The, you know. This was a big thing, and I guess I still do it. It's like, but this was the first one that I actually did. I bought like the how to guide, like.
Well, there was a lot of
GamePro type thing.
Yeah,
there was a lot of verticality in Metroid, right? There was an up, and I don't. I mean, it's the first game. Just thinking, thumbnail sketch here. It's the first game I remember where there was an element, a dimension of depth, as well as
the horizontal.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like the Super Mario Brothers is entirely
horizontal.
Yeah, and that was an interesting thing. And Metroid sort of would break it up.
Were there horizontal?
There were horizontal levels too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the idea of bouncing up and up and up and up further up, and then you get knocked down, and you have to start all over again.
Oh, Samuel. Yeah, coming up and down.
Now, have you guys ever heard about, or did you know as a kid, like the actual cheat code you could get, where you'd get Samus with no armor on, and you could see her hair and stuff like that? Did you know that you could do that?
I remember that was the big reveal, is that she's a woman, you mm-hmm. know, that this guy, that
right.
Because you all automatically think all our heroes are male.
This steely skin is covered by signs. That's good. Yeah, but one of the things I remember about Metroid specifically was the music. The music created that in creepy
ass. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, talking about music and creepy atmosphere, Castlevania was the game that I had like a very negative visceral reaction to that game for whatever reason. The bats, the vampire, I don't know what mm-hmm. it was. It never appealed to me.
I liked it. I liked the Ninja Gaiden.
Ninja Gaiden was great.
It was fun.
I first saw a version of Ninja Gaiden at an arcade.
Yeah.
And it blew me away because it had this kind of strobe light effect, like with the lightning, and you're hopping from tree to tree.
And you can go from here all the way up a tiny, like, yeah. You know, you're in between two cliffs and you can just keep hopping up. I wish I could do that.
He had that grapple jump that would go right. all the way
it would up. It would ping pong, yeah, straight up.
I never played that game. The only exposure game I had to it was the movie The Wizard, where it forms one of the rounds, not one of the early, I think, preliminary rounds. Ninja Gaiden.
He's still talking about.
Well, no, hold on. He's making a good point.
You guys, actually, this is totally cool.
I love the Power Glove. It's so bad.
I think it's impossible to talk about 80s video gaming without
The Wizard.
The Wizard.
Well, maybe.
Our
I would say yes and no.
To the
it's
Wizard.
Incredibly possible. And actually, in a way, you could argue that it's. You're talking about 80s video gaming is more complete without The Wizard.
I love the power.
The Power Glove and all this, it sort of, for me, it kind of ended.
Send me an angel. Send me an angel. Right now.
my love of video games.
Here's the thing. That's a movie about video games.
Yes.
A whole movie.
Yes.
Driven by video games. Now, it's a giant advertisement, and it's filled with bad acting, particularly by Kevin Arnold.
And the worst product that Nintendo ever had in that period, the Power Glove.
I got it for my birthday, and it was the worst.
Yeah.
You hang up the three-try thing on front of your TV, and you just can't get it.
Well, it didn't come to its fulfillment, that technology, until the Wii.
You guys forget how bad it was.
It was so
No, but I mean bad like Michael Jackson bad. Yeah.
Oh. It's so bad.
Oh. It was so bad. Oh. the truth is, that movie was really, it wasn't about the Power Glove so much as the coming out party for Super Mario 3.
Right.
Which was awesome. At the time, really one of the most hyped games ever.
And
I mean, the anticipation level for that game was like beyond anything. Yeah. But I think you can't go back to the simple premise that somebody made a movie about video games. Has that ever happened before?
Never. Or since.
Or since. And maybe there was a Super Mario Brothers movie.
Really?
Which I think has crippled some studio somewhere. But
one of the things that we find especially interesting is that, like, it used to be a movie would come out and they would make a game out of the movie. But now, especially since like 2000, there's a game and then someone will make a movie out of the game, like Tomb Raider, or like they were going to make a Halo movie that Peter Jackson was supposed to direct. Mm-hmm. That's kind of weird, you know, that they've grown so much.
Well, the stories in video games are phenomenal.
They've gotten better, yeah.
Well, they've gotten better, but I mean, even like a basic premise, like, yeah, I could easily watch a movie about whatever.
Well, you know,
Metal Gear.
They're making a movie right now about the Prince of Persia and the Sands of Time.
Yeah,
and it stars Jake Gyllenhaal, and that'll be a major summer release.
Oh, yeah. That was a good game too.
It was a great game.
Well, I think there's inherently, if you have a video game, there's a logical structure from which one can derive a narrative plot, and a lot of movies don't have a logical structure to the plot. So I think
Here's a question for you guys: what video game would you like to see made into a movie?
That has not been made yet.
Joust. I want to see a movie.
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. I would totally watch a movie based on Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
It would be an independent film.
I don't think those 80 movies would do it. The stories have evolved with the art form. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's made, I think, games still relevant and still interesting and where their potential lies. They've gone beyond just creating a puzzle to solve, like a Pac-Man or a Q-Bert or some of these 80s games. And I think it begins with Zelda, is that we're creating an imaginary world and we're creating imaginary characters. But as the games have progressed, those characters and those conflicts and those worlds have become more and more interesting and more realized that they operate like a novel. Like when you sit down with a novel, you are reading an imaginative work. These characters don't exist. Mm-hmm. This conflict doesn't exist. This world, you know, even if it's a realistic novel, but even if it's a fantasy, but you buy into it. And that's what I think some of the great games are doing, is they're giving you characters to care about, putting them in interesting plot situations. And that's why I think you're seeing more and more movies. There's never going to be a Pac-Man movie. Yeah. Who the hell would want to watch that?
I know, it's exactly. It was a joke when I said Joust.
Yeah, I know, but you're getting at the larger point is that that's one of those breaks in video games. When did it go from just puzzle, clear the world, etc., to like, okay, there's a story here.
It was a really good
story. I think Zelda might be that moment.
Certainly, it's the seed of those types.
Zelda has movies. You know, it's like Tolkien all over it, you know. He's fighting goblins and whatever, you know. He's
the quest motif.
Exactly. And, you know. Yeah, you got it.
Different dungeon crawls and the mythology behind
the
series.
The mythology behind it, too,
right. Because there were different characters that Link would encounter throughout his journey that sort of fleshed out this land that he was in, of Hyrule, you know, that we found out that's so he got a name to it. You know?
What was the one for? Was it the one you had for GameCube? Hyrule Castle. Or no, it wasn't GameCube, it was the one after that. It was. It was all 3D. Was it N64?
N64 had Ocarina of Time.
That was a good one. Yeah. That was a really good game.
My favorite system was not one that I owned, but was one a friend had. It was an Intellivision.
Yeah.
Similar to the ColecoVision. And I remember having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah. A related question is, what's the first game you ever played or that you remember?
Yeah.
And really, one of my oldest memories that I have is actually video game memory. And again, it wasn't anything I owned. We didn't own a video game until I was like, I don't know, 6th or 7th grade maybe. Mm-hmm. But neighbors up the street had an Intellivision.
Intellivision, really?
So this is going back to like 1980. Before some of you guys were even born, yeah. I was playing a video game.
No kidding.
And I remember my friend up the street, Mike, you can say that, his parents had an Intellivision. And the look of this is so crazy. I mean, basically, it was almost like a telephone.
Yeah,
had a little dial at the bottom, yeah. And a number keypad.
Right.
And playing this game.
Very technological, almost like a computer.
Yeah, but you think about it, like the way you would move it is almost like the way you would play on a cell phone. Like, you know, 5 will move you left, and 4 or 6 will move you left, and 4 will move you right. Or I got those backwards.
Engineers had more to do with it than game designers.
And you would actually slide a little screen into that if you wanted to, and they would have a little picture on it. And I remember this. You know, there were pictures of the red.
You mean like a little overlay for the keyboard?
A little plastic overlay.
Starting around.
Yeah, yeah. And the game that I remember was a skiing game, and it may have been called Slalom. It may have been called skiing. I don't know what it was. And really, the parents were playing it, not the kids. And I remember this because they were talking about. I remember there was a guy, John B. Anderson, was the third candidate in the 1980 election. It was Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter,
and John B. Anderson.
And the other image is of the Ayatollah Khomeini.
Uh-huh.
And this is all in this one day that I remember. They were going together at the same time.
And you're about 4 years old.
I was probably six. Okay. I was probably six. And I got to play it. But it was so weird to hold. Like, you have the dial, and you'd have to push these numbers. And essentially, the game is, I mean, it's as basic. It's like just a little bit of Beyond Pong, where you're a guy at the top of the mountain, and you just go left and right and left and right. To get down the mountain, and you just gotta like go between the gates.
I feel like my brain hasn't adjusted all that much from those early systems. I'm not really that capable of playing the more sophisticated 3D interactive like modern games.
It took me a really long time to learn how to play Halo because of the controller. I mean, you have so many different. Like dials that, you know, the last thing I played, well, actually, the last thing I played was like Virtua Fighter or something like that. No, it was something like Virtua Fighter. I'm sure it was like 2001, something like that. We were, you know, we played that heavily in 2001 to 2002. But then when Halo came out and I actually played Halo, it took me a while. I had to have my brother help me, like, how does this work? I mean, Jesus Christ. There's like 3 different dials. Like, you gotta, you know, your head can move this way, that way. It's a whole world. If you know, Halo kind of blow the doors off of, like, everything.
Now, it's funny you say that. Do you think that because we're so...
But it's awesome.
It is awesome. But do you think that's because we're so used to playing these kind of retro video games that we're kind of hardwired that way?
Yeah, sure.
We were first playing essentially a 2D world.
Mm-hmm.
For a long, long time. You know, you were looking at a screen and you move left, you move left, you move right, you move right.
Yeah.
So going from Intellivision into Atari was not that big of a leap. It was just like, oh, these games are better. Or even Nintendo. Because even Super Mario Brothers is a 2D world. Mm-hmm. You run right and then you jump over an obstacle.
Right.
And then somewhere it became, wow, all of a sudden you can move the camera. Mm-hmm. And there's a 3D world. You're not just moving left and right. You can move forwards, backwards, up and down. In space.
Anywhere.
Well, yeah, it's almost like that, you know, you could think of it, you know, modern intellectual history has thought in 3 dimensions for a long time, but, or 4 dimensions, really, with the theory of relativity, but it took a little bit, information technology had to play catch up, and when we came online, so to speak, with these video games, we were in a very primitive stage of the mm-hmm. development of that technology. And I think, you know, I think it's clear that people's brains are changing with this technology.
Yeah.
You know, old people have had a hard time catching on to the internet.
Oh, sure.
It's not much of a problem for us.
This is the whole idea of the digital native and the digital tourist.
Right.
And the idea is if you grow up only knowing this realm, it's a natural to you.
Mm-hmm.
But if you grew up with another kind of technology mm-hmm. and then another one supplants it, you're an immigrant, you're a visitor, you've got to adjust and acculturate yourself to the mm-hmm. new rules. And that's kind of what happened in this third or fourth, whatever generation of video gaming we're in now.
Yeah.
You know, if I was playing ColecoVision, where a guy moves left and right to go down the hill, and now I can play, you name it, on mm-hmm. a PlayStation 3 or an Xbox
Call
360.
Of Duty 4.
Exactly. where now there's an entire, you're in a city. You're in a, I mean, you are in an environment,
you're gonna look
a full environment, 360 degrees.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that because people that have grown up in our generation of video gaming that are used to the 2D 8-bit graphics, if you look at the independent game scene and all the independent game designers, they're our age, and inevitably they design in that two-dimensional 8-bit graphics scheme. I think it's because what the point you're going back to is that it's sort of the, you know, it's the language that we're familiar with.
But who's designing then the modern games that are in the three-dimensional? Aren't they our age too?
Well, I think it's just people that have played them all along. Yeah,
that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the idea is that we can do both.
Yeah,
and the people who are designing modern games like Halo or Modern Warfare, you know, Call of Duty, they may have they've grown up with it, as we've all grown up with it. You know what I mean? I don't play 8-bit. I don't play my Atari 2600 anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
But I also don't. I don't play the more sophisticated new games.
I
play a lot of baseball, and you know. Hockey.
now that's
although that's one of those are the games I've always liked. So
yeah. Why do we play games? You know, and I think one is the quest game, like the Zelda.
I've
the
never
Link.
Taken to those as much.
And the other is the more social game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you play Madden, it's so much more fun to play with somebody.
Yeah.
Because you can trash talk
you can
and you can beat them. Right.
Try
and
to beat the computer.
You immediately know who won. Mm-hmm. And then you can play again and battle it again. And
right.
that's the other component.
Oh,
like,
man, it's the best.
Part of video games is like, I said this before, is like reading a book.
Yeah.
And so when you play quest type games where you're solving the puzzle, it's a singular, almost solitary experience, like reading a book. Right, I'm going to immerse myself in this world. I'm going to become one with it. I'm going to solve this puzzle. I'm going to get to the end. I'm going to solve the conflict, and I'll feel like I accomplished something, like Metroid, you know, the games we were talking before. Mm. But the other ones, and these were the games we started playing really in college. Living in a dorm and you're surrounded with young people playing.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to play a Madden marathon. I'm going to kick your butt and then I'm going to kick your butt and if you beat me, you know, you're going to let me have it. And that becomes so much more fun.
Right.
And that's why we play Madden and baseball and
yeah.
That's true. And this experience you're talking about of the social aspect of gaming really goes back to the old like the arcade experience of going to an arcade and pumping in quarters at, you know, Street Fighter or, you know, whatever. What was the game you were talking about?
Virtual Fighter.
And that's and that's the arcade experience of, like, going to this place where you're all gathered around it and you're, like, cheering each other. It's almost like a sports match in that sense. And I think that's more the aspect of why we game more than any other reason. What were some of the arcade games you guys used to like to play?
It's interesting you bring that arcade game idea up with competition, because the old way of measuring it was with high scores. Look at me. Look at what level I got. Okay, my quarters are up. My guy died. It's almost like going back to a pinball, really.
Yeah,
just look at the score that I racked up. You tried to beat it. Now it's your turn.
Yeah. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, man.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
arcade game. Oh, I love that game.
I forgot about
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game. I always like
X-Men, the arcade game was awesome.
I always like shooting games too. Anything involving a gun.
Oh yeah.
I remember playing Doom. Is that or is it Quake?
Time Crisis.
Which one?
You know, there's both.
Arcade, though.
I think it was Doom that we played in my freshman dorm. This was 1996.
Yep.
And we'd have every guy in the hall on his computer linked. And we have our doors open, eight people. And that was the first time, and maybe the only time, really, I played video games in that way. But it's, you know, I've never had an online system, but I would like to get that because I would play. Friends,
yeah,
around the country and other places. You know,
I have a very good friend. In fact, he's my sort of gaming best friend, mm-hmm. and we would play marathon matches of Madden.
Really,
but he was
online.
No, in dorms. But yeah. But eventually he would move around a little bit. He was in the Peace Corps and other things like that. But he eventually moved to California. But he would always pressure say, "You got to get Xbox. You got to get online."
Yeah,
because he would get the headset and he would be able to talk to his brother who lived in another state. His friend who lived back in Philadelphia. Yeah.
And that really is wonderful.
Yeah.
Rule-based activities cannot, by definition, cover the breadth of human existence.
And in another way, you could say that's what makes video games superior. Is because you're not a passive watcher of a story that's told to you.
Right.
But you become now, you are the author.
Totally agree. You are the... Like, choose your own adventure. I mean, the minimal, very limited pleasure that I got from reading those books is exponentially surpassed by video games. Because you have, have so much
control. You have more control.
Way many more options.
Choose your own adventure gave you two options. Right. Maybe three or four.
Turn to page 33. Yeah. What a fight the elf or... If you think his goodies are, or his cookies are good. How about Oregon Trail? Remember that? Was it floppy,
oh, yeah.
Floppy disk?
I played that in school. Like, it was games. Actually part of school.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
You played that in school?
No, really, we did. We played Oregon Trail, like, in school.
So where in the world is there something more depressing than where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, my favorite video game of all time is a game that I still play, and it is a computer game, and it's called Civilization.
Is it SimCity?
The Blessed Civ.
The Blessed Civ.
You like
yes.
that game? Because I always
like
SimCity.
I love that game.
Sid Meier's is a genius.
He is.
Mm-hmm. I need to play that.
It's fantastic.
Tell us a little bit more about it.
Well, I went through a period of real obsession where. This is not the story I wanted to tell. I had better stories. This is not a retro game, but yeah. No, it's I've clocked in many, many, many hours from the computer playing that game.
Is it arranging your own world that makes it appealing?
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Well, I like to. It's different every time you play, and depending on the society you have and the world, the globe that you're given, and all the resources
you have.
You
don't have anyone living in your basement in a locked closet, do you?
That's for another podcast. When I was thinking about a big question that we've been asking about favorite games and platforms that we've been using, you know, my mind goes back to the different platforms. I mean, really, it's an evolution. And, and I do feel like I've watched these games evolve. Mm-hmm. You know, the first system that I had was an Atari. I think it was a 5200. I think that's one of them. And, you know, there were games like Moonbounce and Zaxxon and, you know, some of those classic games. And then really, I fell in love with games, I think the way we all did with Nintendo. And that was the peak, whether it was Contra, you know, up, up, down, down, left, right, left, right, you know, Double Dragon.
BA Select Star.
Street Fighter.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Street Fighter. Yes,
was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
Streets of Rage. Streets Do you remember Rage. That one?
Yeah.
What's Final Fantasy.
Never played that.
Final Fantasy. Yeah, never.
World of Warcraft. We didn't even talk about.
Continue your point. Actually, sorry there.
Never played that either. And then when I got to college for 2 years, the ultimate machine was the Sega Genesis.
Yes.
Which is not anything we've talked about yet, but the Sega Genesis. Sonic was great, but I'll tell you what, Sega Genesis was where Madden took off.
Yes,
Madden,
it is.
And awesome. And I played Madden 92, 93, you know, when the Redskins were good. That gives you a glimpse of that time.
That's right.
The Redskins were good.
The blip in the historical radar.
And I'll tell you what, I grew to like football through a video game.
I agree.
As a kid, I was a baseball fan, and that was essentially what I liked in sports.
Well, it's because our dads were 50s guys from the Catholic suburbs.
Right.
And that's, you're going to like baseball.
Right.
Football is a much better sport.
That's debatable and maybe a subject of another podcast. But what I will say is that through playing Sega, I grew to like football and I grew to like hockey.
Yes.
Two sports I really didn't care
about.
Hockey is
awesome. And I think you're right. Video games probably illustrated that.
But that's what, I mean, it was the college experience. We had a lot of guys around.
Mm-hmm.
You could compete, trash talk. It was that social element.
Yeah.
Now, I like what Bill Bear says about hockey. I never actually grew up watching hockey at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because of just like the way it was in our house. Right. But I will say, I went to a hockey game when they had the big strike the one year. Mm-hmm. I forget what year.
It was like 1930.
No, it was like 2000. No, it was like 2000.
And 20.
And 4.
Yeah.
They had a strike. They didn't play. Who knows, right? Went to a Phantoms game. Really enjoyed watching hockey.
Hockey's a great sport.
Watching hockey live is great.
But I like what Bill Burr says about hockey. It's hilarious. He's like, if you like the movie Mad Max, which is awesome, you should like that.
True.
You should like that. If you like the movie Mad Max and you don't like hockey, you are a very inconsistent
person.
And it's true. It's true. I go back and now I'm like looking at hockey. I'm like, this is actually pretty cool. It's very cool. They let them fight. I mean, come on. Until someone's bleeding profusely. Mm-hmm. I mean, any other sport, it's like hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines. It's like hockey. Yeah. It's like, just let them go.
That's part of the game.
Knock their teeth out.
We're going to do a different
really
discussion because
like
we're talking about video games.
But this is video games. Well, ice hockey was a video game for Nintendo, which was really cool. You can make people fat, make them fast.
My favorite video game is the one.
Bingo.
Blades of Steel. Blades of Steel. Blades of Steel.
Is what you're talking about.
Blades of Steel.
And that is the hockey game that really we all first played. Now Blades of Steel.
You make the head bleed.
They let you fight in the game. But
the blood splatter, the little digital pixelated blood splatter.
And that's the,
is it more fun to fight in a game that's not a fighting game?
Yeah, sure.
Or
like golf.
Fighting game.
I want to see a golf fighting game. That would be awesome with archery.
I
want to
see a chess fighting game where you're playing chess and you can punch across the board and slam somebody's head in their pieces. I would like to see a game where you play either God or the devil and you get to destroy whole civilizations.
Wow.
Like an anti-civilization game. I don't really want to see that.
Yeah.
It's really scary.
Here's a nerdy term for that. There's probably a mod for that. You like that?
There's a modification. Yeah.
What's the worst game you guys have ever played?
That is a great
E.T.
question.
E.T. Dude.
Bingo. Correct answer.
Batman. There's also a very bad Batman video game.
I asked my wife if she wanted to join us for this, and I said, did you ever play video games? And she says, I played one video game, and it turned me off for life. That game was...
E.T.
E.T.
Dude,
I know about E.T. I've played B.E.T. And then I actually saw online this freaking montage of music and everything like that. They talked about this. This game, E.T., was so bad. Lucas ate it so bad that it was, like, the worst. They actually had a recall of all these games. And they actually buried it in the desert.
Oh, did you? I just wanted to explain to our listeners a little bit about how terrible E.T. is.
So bad.
Here is the concept of the game. You are E.T., I think. It's hard to tell who's who in this game. This is an Atari game. It goes back to, like, 1983, like, when the movie came out. And I think they rushed it. I think that was the idea. It was one of those ideas of the movie's coming out. It's going to be a hit. We want to have a product. And you go around and you're trying to find pieces of a phone. And you're led around looking by the Reese's Pieces, you know, another plug bear. And you go down into a pit, like a hole. And you're looking for pieces of a telephone, presumably so that you can
phone home.
And that's it. That's the whole game.
It's like a depressive's fantasy.
Okay, so E.T. is my worst favorite game. It's your least favorite game. It's my wife's least favorite game. What's your least favorite game you ever played?
That's probably my least favorite game had been...
Can I venture a guess for you?
Yeah.
Jekyll and Hyde for the Nintendo Entertainment
System. Ooh, no, bad. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for the...
NES.
Oh, yeah.
That was
a
super hard. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was so bad.
Because you could get, like, through the first three levels, and that's it. And it just
impossible.
Became, like, impossible. And it was like, this isn't fun.
What is he doing? And they don't move like turtles. They move real slow. And they're like these little guys, and they're not moving like the, you know, the turtles are acrobatic. And
there was
ninja.
An underwater level,
oh,
too,
yeah.
Wasn't
the,
there?
The turtles
so
are
really.
Teenage Mutant Ninja.
Teenage Mutant
turtles.
Ninja Turtles.
Can I tell you what my favorite game is to this day?
No, no, still your least favorite game.
Least favorite.
Well, I Castlevania much earlier in the show.
I have another. This is my least favorite, but it was my most disappointing game. It was a game for Nintendo called Kid Icarus.
Kid Icarus.
If anybody remembers that,
I remember it.
That is a good one.
But I was really looking forward to it, and I saved up my money to buy it,
oh,
and I bought it. I don't even remember the gameplay of it. I just remember the feeling,
right.
Of disappointment.
Right.
Kid Icarus. What was that game all about? I remember that game. He could fly a little.
Yes.
Bit. It was yeah, of course. Icarus, like the guy.
I'm a bit of a simpleton,
like the Greek myth.
And so my favorite game to this day is the game. I can't remember the artillery. I think it's called. Where you shoot, like, the projectile, and you have to get the angle.
Oh, I
hate
41 degrees up, 32 degrees.
It's my favorite game.
I hate that game.
It's like gorillas.
Artillery.
Like throwing the bananas and blowing up the.
That's like a free game on the iPod.
It's a free game
on
the
parachute.
PC.
Yeah,
it's
terrible.
The games.
He might as well say my favorite game is Minesweeper.
No, Minesweeper's bad.
Solitaire.
My favorite game is Solitaire.
How about this one, guys?
Digital Solitaire.
Are you surprised how many people play Solitaire still?
Yes.
At work, people play Solitaire.
Yes.
Guys, top 5 80s or 90s retro video games, what are they?
I've got my list.
Let's hear it.
And I had to make apologies because there were a couple of titles that I wanted to include but couldn't. One of the is the first game I really did love, which was Pitfall. Doesn't make the list. It was great game in 1984 or whatever. I loved Indiana Jones. Another game was Bruce Lee for the Commodore 64, which didn't get any love by us tonight, but was a great gaming system, and one of the first games that I would prefer to stay inside and play than go outside. Like, all my friends were going to go outside and play. I said, I'll just stay here and play this game. Gauntlet, which you mentioned before, which is one of the great arcade games.
I love Gauntlet, yeah.
You know, where you could be the warrior or the
elf
or the Valkyrie, or, you know, you could pick your character. And the other one was an obscure game for Nintendo called Rygar. where you were where you were kind of like this barbarian warrior with like this shield that you could throw, which was a lot of fun, and was originally on my list, but I took it off. So here's my top five. Number five is a game called Road Blasters, which was an arcade-only game, and I spent more quarters on this game than any other one. You're a race car. It's a little like Spy Hunter. You would get weapons, and you'd be not just driving and racing, but you'd have to shoot and collect fuel balls and lay traps behind you. Number four, I imagine, will be on somebody's list, and that's Double Dragon. And that was a great game, especially when you were paired with somebody else. Very similar in concept to another game, Contra, where there's two of you, you're fighting, the two of you are battling weapons. Big guys. Number three, I mentioned before, I love this game. It's The Adventures of Link. The sequel, which I think was better than the original, and the original was awesome too, The Legend of Zelda. My number two favorite game, Metroid, a game I spent a whole summer of my life playing. And the number one game, I think, is probably the greatest video game ever made in terms of design, character, just fun to play, Super Mario Brothers.
I would say I probably had more fun. This is number one, so I'm going in rank order, as opposed to reverse order. My favorite game of all time is probably Mario Kart. And I say that not because of the quality of the game, the design, the strategy involved, but simply the fun that I had playing it with people that I went to college with.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, actually, I just remembered the name of the game. Similarly, this Super Smash Brothers, which is the game where you're kind of in Hyrule Castle or somewhere else.
Yeah. Very good.
I always had a lot of fun playing that game with people. And number three, and it's purely for nostalgic reasons because I never got very far in the game, but I always remember liking it. It's Legend of Zelda from the original Nintendo.
Yeah.
If I had to put a number four, and I'm resistant to it, it's all of the games you could play for the Commodore 64, because I completely admire that system.
Nice.
Yeah. Spy Hunter and those types
of games. Oh, Spy Hunter. It's a great game.
Yeah.
Great game. Very similar to Bump and Jump, if anybody remembers it.
That's all I have. I mean, if I had to truly say what games I would rank, those are the ones.
My video games that I like the best are, for when I was a kid, was Super Mario Brothers. That was the best video game. Mega Man, because he had a little blaster arm, and it was cool. And
it's a classic.
That's a classic game. And Mega Man, James Bond, GoldenEye. And then Mortal Kombat, also at the same kind of time period in high school. Road Rash, which was a motorcycle game where you would club people and you'd get the Diablo motorcycle.
I remember that.
Yeah.
You'd like knock them out.
Broomhelga. I mean, that was like, honestly, I think I would put Road Rash as my number one video game.
I've really enjoyed this, guys. Have fun out there. Thanks.
Jerry Bonner is a freelance writer, producer, editor, and critic who works in the video games industry. Since 1998, Jerry has written for GQ, EGM, Ars Technica, Yahoo, 1UP, What They Play, and TheCritics.tv, among many others. In a recent phone interview, I heard what Jerry had to say about retro video games, gaming, and the video games industry. Jerry, welcome.
Thanks, Dad. I appreciate it.
So, what are some of the earliest memories of video games that you have growing up?
Well, my first experience, really, and this with some of the earlier games, the earlier systems, not even before there were real systems. My earliest memory is one. There's something called the Telstar Arcade. My cousin had. It was a kind of a hybrid Pong console that had like a light gun, and it actually had like a racing wheel, and it was like a big pyramid almost. It had different sides. You could do different things beyond just play Pong, but they all were kind of based off like that black and white kind of Pong variant kind of thing. And beyond that was those handhelds. You know, I don't know if people even remember those, the early handhelds, like made by Coleco and Mattel. You know, they were football, and there was basketball, and there was hockey, and those kind of things. You know, they were just kind of like little lights, you know, little light flashes that moved from place to place, and that was like kind of the game. And, you know, the noises were, you know, sound effects, and just the light flashes were more the gameplay. There really wasn't gameplay per se. It was just kind of mashing buttons. And even beyond that was, first real, I guess, arcade game that I ever really got into was Space Invaders. I remember kind of, trying to hustle quarters off my parents and grandparents going play Space Invaders at, the old sit-down arcade consoles at the pizza place around the corner from my house. You know, those are kind of my real early memories of gaming and video games, not beyond even, the real console era. My first console was, I got the Atari 2600,
mm-hmm.
Christmas of 1980. So that was the first kind of, in the house. You didn't have to go to an arcade anymore. You didn't have
right.
to, go to a pizza place or the drugstore or that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
To, do that thing. So, that was my first real introduction to I wanted one, Atari as soon as it came out, but, they were, even in, what was it, I think 1977, they were, almost $200 or $300. So,
The cost was a little prohibitive.
You're 9 years old, it's kind of tough to put together that kind of money, so you have to rely on your parents to get it for you.
Excellent. So what kind of games did you play on the Atari 2600? What were some of your favorite games from that system?
The first game that I really kind of played incessantly was Asteroids. Was a big one, because that was huge in the arcades, but the home version of it was actually a fairly good replication of it, for the Atari 2600. There was another one, Championship Soccer. I think it was Pele's Championship Soccer was another real good one. It actually had some like kind of special effects when you scored a goal. I mean, it actually had like little fireworks when you actually scored, and that was always pretty cool. And that was, as the console went on, I mean, there were, obviously some classic games. I was a huge Raiders of the Lost Ark fan, and, Raiders of the Lost Ark was a big one that I played a lot of. Yar's Revenge was another one that
was
a big one. Berserk, that was a good one. That was a good arcade port to the 2600. And some of the other classic ones, too, the Magic ones were pretty good, like Cosmic Ark and Riddle of the Sphinx and Demon Attack, stuff like that were all real big games. Some of the older activated ones too, Chopper Command and Mega Mania were all good.
Yeah, I am familiar with Chopper Command, yeah.
Yeah, Chopper Command, it was essentially, it was Activision's version of Defender,
mm-hmm.
essentially. And it was, they just said, okay, let's take, the Defender concept and, kind of, just updated a little bit. And if anyone remembers the Atari version of Defender that came out on the 2600, it was, the Atari version of Defender was horrible because the ship would actually vanish when you shot. It would, blink, and, it just wasn't any good. But Chopper Command actually kind of got that formula right. It was a really cool kind of twitch game.
Now, when the Famicom or Nintendo Entertainment System came out, did you take to that immediately?
Actually, there was kind of a gap there, especially for me, because I got more right after, but after the Atari kind of faded in like 1983, 1984, at least the 2600, I mean, the Atari had, other consoles, but I actually got a computer. My next big thing was more the Commodore 64. Was really my big next gaming step, and because there was just access to so many games through legal and illegal means of copying and stuff like that. I mean, there was just so much out there. You had friends and early bulletin board systems where you could swap games and things like that. And
sure.
When you're a kid, you don't really have any money, so access to that kind of stuff was great. I mean, it was like you're in a candy store and everything's free. I didn't come to the Nintendo probably until 1987. My mother bought it for us for Easter, just, you know, on a whim kind of thing. And, you know, I was kind of content, you know, with the Commodore 64, but, you know, I knew that, you know, Nintendo was out there, obviously, and, you know, there was, by that point, they had kind of really grabbed hold, you know. Sure. And I had younger brothers, you know, who were their friends, were always talking about, oh, you know, this, you know, Zelda game, and, and, you know, you're like, okay, well, I'm sitting here playing, you know, Ultima, and, you know,
Ultima,
you know, Bard's Tale and stuff like that on the computer, which are, you know, role-playing games, but not really mm-hmm. action-oriented, more, you know, kind of turn-based, or really based on, you know, pen and paper, like Dungeons and Dragons type stuff. It, just because of the limitations of technology, just the way it went, it was, you know, it was good at doing that kind of stuff, but not really action-oriented. And, mm-hmm. you know, here's this game, Zelda, where, you know, you're actually, yeah, it has an RPG kind of thing going on, but you're controlling the hero to an extent where you're, you know, you're actually, you know, using the sword and using the magic and doing that kind of stuff rather than just pressing a key and saying, okay, I'm, you know, I press, you know, Z and I shoot a fireball. Okay, that's not much fun, but mm-hmm. you know, sitting there and, you know, using your sword to hack away at different things is where, you know, it came in. And, you know, the first couple big ones on Nintendo, the NES that I really got into were Contra, obviously, and mm-hmm. Nintendo's version of ice hockey with the little different, you know, the skinny guy, the medium guy, and the fat guy, you know, was real good. That was a real good version of hockey. One of the first really good ones, you know, that had a real kind of feel to the game. RC Pro-Am was one I really got into. Still to this day, that's one of the few racing games that I really enjoy. I'm not a big racing fan, but RC Pro-Am was one that really was fun and seemed to nail, you know, that kind of fun racing platform kind of thing.
In terms of retro video games, and by retro, I'm talking from ColecoVision, Atari, up to maybe the Nintendo 64 era. Are there any games you still like to go back to once in a while and play?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I actually, you know, just bought an Amiga, an old Amiga 1000.
Wow.
Never had one when I was a kid. I always wanted one. you know, but, you know, when you're a kid again, when you're younger, you know, you have to kind of rely on your parents. And, you know, the Amiga was, I think, $2,500 mm-hmm. in 1985 when it came out. You know, so that translates to about like $6,000 or so today.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, you know, and my parents, you know, I said, oh, I'd like an Amiga. And, you know, and they kind of looked at me and said, yeah, right. Yeah, have fun with that. And, you know, enjoy your Commodore 64. Yeah, right. Enjoy your Commodore 64. I mean, Metal Gear Solid, I think, is one that, I mean, it wasn't on Nintendo 64, but it came out in that era, is one that I really like a lot, that I always go back to. It's probably one of my favorite games of all time. There's a lot of times now, on the Xbox Live Arcade and you know, WiiWare and stuff like that, you can download a lot of those classic ones. And, I mean, I literally, you know, and Xbox Live now has this, you know, the arcade thing where you can, you know, literally download old Atari games. And I was just playing, you know, Adventure, believe it or not. And, you're playing Adventure, you know, on a 50-inch high-def screen is something. it's kind of a surreal experience you would never expect it to have, you know, when, you know, you're 10 years old playing that game for the first time. I mean, it's funny. I remember that game being, you know, hard and difficult, and you know, just at the time, you know, really kind of like, you know, struggling to kind of get through it. In a sense, it was, it seemed to. And then, you know, when I played it the other day, and when I downloaded it, I literally beat the game in like 45 seconds. It was like, well, okay, why was this hard? I don't remember. And you know, that kind of stuff. You know, Xbox is doing a nice job with that. They, you know, that whole, you know, retro arcade experience. Tempest was another one that I just downloaded, which is still fun.
Yeah. Yeah, XBLA is it's definitely a great tool. I love it.
Yeah, and I said now that they've just implemented this new, like, you know, arcade theme where you can actually, like, you know, decorate your old arcades and collect these old arcade cabinets. But, you know, even in, but then still play these old, you know, old school games like you're playing them in an old arcade. Kind of a nice little touch that they added just recently. And so, you know, playing Adventure and Yars of Revenge and Combat on, you know, 50-inch high-def screens is, you know, kind of amusing.
We were just talking about the independent game scene. And what we're finding, especially with the indie games, is that they sort of intentionally designed their games to have the sprites and pixels that imitate, like, earlier iterations of video games, say, from the Nintendo era. How do you feel about indie games?
I think it's great. I mean, obviously, you know, not every game should be or could be, you know, a Metal Gear Solid 4 or Call of Duty or, you know, these big epic, you know, things. I think it's great. I mean, gameplay is always, I think, paramount. People go on and on about graphics and story and stuff like that, but, you know, you take a game, you know, like, you know, these simple puzzlers that, you know, that, like, a lot of these kind of casual companies now are pumping out and doing a good job with, like, you know, Bejeweled, obviously, and
Plants vs. Zombies?
Yeah, you know, Plants vs. Zombies and things like that, and you know, the iPhone is another great, you know, platform for those kind of, you know, old school, you know, gameplay driven, you know, more interested in, you know, just, you know, rather than story and atmosphere and huge, you know, kind of epic set pieces, just really interested in more, you know, kind of a, you know, a simple, you know, pick up and play kind of, you know, experience. And indie games are fantastic. You know, and it's funny how, in a sense, you know, the video game industry is aping and even, you know, eclipsing, you know, not just in dollar amounts, you know, the movie industry. I mean, back in the day, I mean, it was, you know, something, you know, to be, you know, when a game became like, you know, a movie or it had like these cinematic touches, you know, it really was like kind of this cool thing, like, wow, they can really do that now. And, you know, now, I mean, it's almost expected to have these kind of, you know, the cutscenes and the, you know, the drama. And you'll see, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, I guess most of the innovation, you know, in video games moving forward will come from, you know, these independent, you know, game developers, much like, you know, independent films. You know, most recently, I think most of our generation can agree with that. You know, there was that wave in the late 80s, early 90s of, you know, independent guys, you know, like Robert Rodriguez and Kevin Smith.
Absolutely.
In the film industry. You know, Quentin Tarantino, obviously, is in that realm as well, who have now moved on to bigger budgets, you know, in inside the studio system. But they all started out, you know, as these little, you know, indies, and, you know, Hollywood kind of, you know, came around and scooped them up. So, and I think a lot of times, you know, the independent game developers want the same thing.
Really, what you're getting with the independent game scene is sort of like an imitation of the way it was at the very beginning of the video games industry. You've got maybe a programmer and maybe a designer and an artist, and that was it. That was your team.
Yeah, so. No, I think that's great. I mean, I, you know, you always hear about that. You know, these poor guys who, you know, slaved away on, you know, these Atari games, and it was just one guy who had to do, you know, the art and the programming and sound, but, you know, with a very, very limited amount of memory. I think, you know, Atari 2600 had 128 bytes. You know, not, you know, kilobytes, not megabytes, bytes. You know, I think a watch nowadays has more memory than that. You know, and they accomplished, you know, some, you know, obviously some very magical things. I mean, you know, here we are, you know, 30-odd years later, still, you know, talking about, you know, Atari games. I mean, ultimately, it's fun. I mean, you know, gameplay is, you know, a game is supposed to be fun. You know, if it doesn't have that, if it, you know, then what's the point?
Yeah, you can have the most brilliant particle effects in the world, but what difference does it make, you know?
Exactly. I mean, you know, if you have the most detailed facial models and, you know, the most detailed, you know, kind of, or voice acting or, you know, that kind of stuff, well, what does that matter if the game's not fun? There was an ad way back in the day, you know, one of the first Electronic Arts ads was, you know, can a video game make you cry? And I think now we're getting to that point where, you know, there are guys who are trying for that kind of emotional impact in a game. And should it go there? I guess it should. I mean, it seems just a logical progression. If, you know, you buy into the whole, you know, aping the movie industry type thing, and you know, you want to have experience, and I think people, you know, vary. There, you know, what kind of experience you want? Do you want to pick up and play, you know, 10-minute little session with something like Peggle or Plant Zombies, and you'll put it down and walk away? Or do you want something like Heavy Rain, where, you know, you're going to be thinking about it?
It's kind of a remarkable achievement that games have come so far that they're able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and BioWare has been, you know, another one who, you know, who kind of has pushed the envelope, with the RPGs and having, you know, that kind of involvement and getting more, you know, more and more, you know, cinematic and, you know, kind of, I mean, they, you know, one of their bigger games that kind of really cemented, you know, their, status.
Their AAA status, yes.
Was Knights of the Old Republic, you know, which, you know, basically just took, you know, the Star Wars, you know, mythology and really took it to the next level. People, you know, will argue again that, you know, that was better than a lot of the, you know, the new movies that, you know, that Lucas made, you know, Episode 1, 2, and 3, you know, that had more character development and depth than any of those movies. So, I mean, you know, it's something that, I think it just really depends on the person. I mean, so, you know, there are people who just want, you know, that simple Twitch experience and, you know, want to, you know, play a game for 10, 15 minutes and then put it down and not think about it again. And there are others who, you know, want that involving, you know, interactive movie or interactive novel type experience.
If you had to pick 5 of your favorite retro video games, and again, by retro, I mean from ColecoVision and Atari, probably up to and including the N64, maybe Dreamcast era, what would be top 5 if you just had to think off the top of your head?
Okay. Definitely Metal Gear Solid, the original on the PlayStation. That's probably still my favorite game of all time. It's still a great game, and it's still, again, it was one of these ones that really, I think that was the first game that really, really nailed both gameplay, and it really married or melded well gameplay and that cinematic experience we just spoke about. To me, that was the first game that really got it really right in terms of, you know, doing both. The gameplay was great, you know, the cinematic elements and how it just made you feel like you were in the middle of this kind of cool techno spy thriller. Another one, I guess, you know, I just said RC Pro-Am. It's just a great little game. You know, it's just fun, you know, continuing to play. A Dreamcast game that I've always enjoyed, and it's still pretty fun to this day, was Jet Set Radio, or, you know, Jet Grind Radio. I guess, you know, another, if something from the NES era, or I already kind of mentioned one of those, something from the Atari era, would probably be something like Yar's Revenge. As I said, I sat there, you know, a week ago when I downloaded it on the Xbox Arcade and, you know, played it for a good, you know, hour or two, and, you know, you would think, you know, that something that simple would be like, I didn't think I would. I think, oh yeah, and I downloaded it more for the nostalgia factor, and, you know, sat there and, you know, and played it, you know, for, like I said, a good solid hour. So, and then another one, I guess, I took one from, I guess, the Commodore era. Probably, and I would have to, this is going to be an odd choice, but a game I think I played most on my Commodore 64, believe it or not, was an older baseball game called Hardball. It just was a really well done, especially for that era. game, baseball game. It just really got everything right, in terms of ambiance and gameplay. And, and if you could get, it only really had two teams, but, if you, knew people or whatever, you could hack the game in a sense and, put your own players in there and, change things up a bit. So that was probably one that I really played incessantly on the Commodore 64. So those five would be one that would, keep me entertained if I was, on a desert island. I think people are, people always say, oh, we should, it seems that way in technology-driven industries. Everyone wants to look forward and keep moving forward. But I think you can, I think there's something to be said for looking in the past and learning, from the past and, taking things that were done in the past and kind of applying them to today.
In all the talks I've had about old-school video games, one thing became clear. Games are a significant aspect of our culture and our lives. Picking up an old Nintendo controller or Atari joystick isn't just picking up an obsolete piece of electronic hardware, but a piece of your memories, an artifact from the ancient and lost civilization of your childhood, archaeological evidence of a once flourishing world filled with green pipes, magical triforces, plumbers in red and green jumpsuits, fire flowers, lost space explorers, and captive princesses. A place somewhere between summer break and recess. Playing these games helps me to remember this happy land, where every mistake was wiped away with the push of a reset button. And maybe that's what we like best about video games. We can still go to these places. As a matter of fact, they're sitting on our shelves right now. Happy gaming.
A long, long time ago, I can still remember how that console used to make me smile. And I knew that if I had my chance, I'd ride an ostrich wheel and then maybe I'd be happy for a while. The late 90s made me shiver with every game that God delivered. More first-person shooters, bridge chicks with big hooters. I can't remember if I cried when I read about the arcade demise, but something touched me deep inside the day that 2D died. So bye, bye, Mr. 16-bit Sprite. Flew my Twinbee and my Winbee looking for extra life. And Bitmap boys swung over pinballs with vines.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to Pods of Speech, an internet radio show. Special thanks to all my guests. I'm your producer and editor, Dan McLaughlin. For a full listing of all the artists that were featured on this podcast, you can go to my blog, Parts of Speech, at www.danpos.blogspot.com. You can also contact me at podsofspeech@gmail.com. Stay tuned for next week's episode, Guitars and Guitarists.